And we'll add links there as well to Ridwell, our interview from earlier. We spoke with Taylor Lowen. Thank you to everyone who supported us in our most recent fall fun drive. That was very cool. Got to get support from our listeners, keeping the community radio going. So yeah, kbu.fm/thegap. You can email us, thegapradio@gmail.com. Instagram is @thegapradio. We're very contactable if you would like to do that, is yes. What I'm trying to say.
Indeed. And don't forget Sunday to fall back.
Falling back on Sunday.
1 hour back.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will be back next week. Take care of yourselves and each other.
Have a good one. Bye-bye. Bye. Girls, we run this.
Like the KBOO Community Radio Facebook page. Find KBOO Community Radio on Facebook and like our page, and have events, ticket giveaways, and great information delivered directly to your personal feed. 1 out of every 7 humans is on Facebook, so using Facebook to share KBOO with your friends and family has never been easier. Like KBOO on Facebook today.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kbu.fm. Due to the temporary closures of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Program Advisory Committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kbu.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Today on Wings, Women and Wildlife in Kenya.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
In the grasslands around Mount Kilimanjaro in Kenya, elephants roam a habitat of about 120,000 square kilometers that includes 4 different national parks. They use their traditional routes to travel between parks. The same territory is home to Maasai people. They are traditional herders, but due to changing circumstances, have also begun to farm. When they plant in elephant migration routes, elephants want to eat the crops, and wild predators like to eat domestic animals. Humans, in turn, kill wild animals for revenge or for food. They help foreign hunters to kill for sport, and they also kill animals, especially elephants and rhinoceroses, to sell their parts on the global black market. These problems create a job niche for rangers, whose task is to reduce human-wildlife conflict and report illegal activities. Nearly 300 wildlife rangers patrol the area. 16 are women, drawn from the local communities. Like other rangers, the women received substantial education and training. It's still rare for Maasai women to have secondary education or salaried jobs. The women's patrol group is known as Team Lioness. Wings reporter Diana Wanyonyi interviewed 2 of the rangers, and they talked about how their approach to rangering varies from that of men.
The unit, codename is Team Lioness. Their effort has seen a reduction in human-wildlife conflict in the neighborhood surrounding the Amboseli National Park. The team patrols almost 400,000 acres of community land surrounding the park, where wildlife spend 70% of their time. The unit is being supported by the International Fund for Animal Welfare, which recruits, trains, and pays the rangers from the community. Their main duty is to talk to pastoralists who cover a lot of ground with their livestock and encounter wildlife along the way. During their patrols, Team Lioness has been walking on foot for between 20 and 40 kilometers a day, but an ungovernmental organization has now provided a patrol vehicle for them. They monitor the wild animals' movement patterns and record their GPS coordinates. This helps them to know where the wild animal like to frequent and warn the pastoralists to avoid areas where they would likely encounter wild animals. Dressed in a jungle green gear with her surveillance kits well placed in her pockets, Sharon Alunkinyi, 21 years old, is happy with her career. She spoke in Swahili language, Kenya's second national language after English.
Community, unajua sisi ndio tulikuwa wasichana wa kwanza kuandikwa.
We were the first one to be recruited and employed in the community.
So, community, pali ninaishi walikuwa nadhani sita make. Walikuwa wanaona like...
Where I was staying, people thought I will not make it to patrol in the forest.
Kukaa porini, kufanya kazi ngumu, kulinda wanyama, kuwahepa wanyama, ilikuwa ngumu, walikuwa wanaona like ngumu.
To do hard work, to take care of wildlife, and dodging them, it was difficult.
Moso kwa wanaume walikuwa natudharau.
So, most men didn't believe in us.
Lakini, tukakuja tukawaprove ya kwamba...
They were looking down on us.
The other day, niliulizwa na mwanaume mwingi, sasa nyiwe mnahepaga wana.
But after some days, we proved them wrong.
Wanyama aje na venye mko wiki. Mimi nikamueleza kwamba, huwa tukienda kuni atuendagi na nyinyi. So, huwa tunaendaga wenyewe.
For example... The other day, a Maasai warrior asked me how we escape the wild animals in the jungle, the way we are weak.
So, venye tulikuja tukafanya kazi na tukaprove ya kwamba hata sisi tunaweza fanya kama wanaume.
I answered him that when we women and girls in the community, when we go to fetch firewood in the jungle, men don't accompany us.
So the same God who anatusave kwenda kuni na tuhepane na hizo ndovu, the same God atatusave hata sisi huku porini.
So the same God who save us to go to fetch firewood and we escape elephants is the same God who will save us here at the forest.
Hapo sasa ndo alinyamaza, wakanyamazia, ndo wakaanza kutukangratulate.
When we came and started working and proved to men that we are equally good at work as them, that is when they started congratulating us.
Hii kazi involve like kuna patrols na kuna pia huwa like the main thing yenye tuliandikwa ni kupata information.
This work is not easy. We do patrols and the main reason why we were employed is to get detailed report from the community.
Kutoka kwa community. Kwa maana kwa wanaume si rahisi kupata information kama sisi sasa like wanawake.
It's not easy for men to get such information in the community like us.
Sisi ndo huwa tuna socialize na wamama wa nyumbani, tunaenda kunina wao, tunawasaidia kulea watoto, tunaenda maji, tunakutana nao tukifua. So at least wataweza ongelelea kitu na tukisikiza tunaweza forward kama
but we associate with women in the villages easily. We take care of the children and we also do laundry and fetch water together. So we are able to get a lot of information, like if one's husband kills wildlife so that they can bring food at home or money.
For example, kama kuna mama mzee wake anaua wanyama wa pori ndio apate chakula, malete chakula nyumbani, tutaweza kuwa na wao kwa maana sahihi.
That is when we gather the same information and forward it at the office.
Kama sahi kwa kazi, tuna dress, but tukienda home, tuna capture na hiyo life ya nyumbani, kukaa na wao. Like, we don't have any different with them, hivyo.
Here at work, we are rangers. But when we go back at home, we easily cope with our traditional way of life to mingle with the villagers without any problem.
Huwa lazima uwe na GPS, uwe na radio, uwe na notebook na uwe na kalamu. Kwa sasa tuko na mpaka simu ya kuchukua reports. Huwa tunaenda porini, tuna count.
Here at work, we have GPS, radio, pen, notebook, and now we have mobile phones that we use to record reports.
Kama tukiona grand gazelle, ama zebra, ama giraffe, huwa tuna count, tuna zi count zote, then tuna zi write. After that tunakuja tuna make baadaye reports tunatuma kwa office.
We count wildlife, for example, grand gazelles, zebras or giraffes. We count them and take record. We compile reports and send them to the office. Purity Lakara, aged 24, and a mother of a three-year-old child, is another proud ranger. We talked to each other on the edge of the Amboseli Park with the elephants and antelopes in our view.
What inspired me to become a ranger is the passion and the love I have to wildlife. I grew up together with the wildlife, so I had that passion, that love towards them. So I even started loving them while I was still young. So for me, getting this chance to protect them, I was very humble and happy and lucky also.
Members of Team Lioness say women are considered weak in their Maasai community, and their decision to join the Rangers was at first met with doubt, scorn and sneer. However, today they are widely embraced. They use their convincing power to talk to Maasai warriors out of retaliation whenever wild animals attack their livestock.
We have been facing so many challenges, especially we as Team Lioness, I mean female rangers, because first we face challenges from the community. The attitude from the community towards us was very negative because many thought that we will not make it. So also many are discouraging us. They told us, how can you go there, work together with men? So this job is very hard. So many of them discourage us not to do this. And also according to the status we are in the community, our community initially takes women as very weak people. So the work of a woman in our community was only to fetch water, looking after the babies, milking the cow. So for us coming and doing this, it was very hard for them to believe that we can do it. Also in the bushes, we faced so many challenges. For example, there was a time we met a buffalo. So it scared us a lot. Some of us go with injuries, though they were minor injuries, but it was very scary also. Also the terrain, the forest where we do the patrol, was very harsh. It was harsh and it is harsh, but we are trying to encounter all the circumstances to make sure that what we'll do it well and good.
The local connection is an essential feature of Team Lioness. Part of their mission was designated from the beginning as, quote, engaging with Maasai women and maintaining community buy-in for conservation through school visits and fostering community involvement. The website of the International Fund for Animal Welfare touts its community involvement. It has leased 26,000 acres from more than 1,600 landowners with a series of five-year leases, currently set to end in 2023. These leases provide corridors for animal passage through the vast Maasai area surrounding the park. A good part of their funding has come from the U.S. State Department's Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs, which in turn has backed the UK-based International Fund for Animal Welfare to train and hire rangers in the area around Kenya's Amboseli National Park, an area famous for wildlife tourism. The IFAW partners in turn with Kenyan government, nonprofit, and private sectors. Purity Lakara, whom you heard earlier, was quoted as saying, quote, I will go back to my community and tell them, you kill that lion, you kill your future. She also said the worst part of being a ranger was the months of COVID isolation. When she next saw her daughter, the two-year-old was three. COVID has brought other hardships to wildlife protection. The year 2019 saw a dramatic reduction in wildlife poaching, but subsequent figures are expected to show it rose again due to economic devastation. Wildlife tourism has been the second largest economic sector in Kenya and its greatest source of foreign currency. Travel bans brought it close to a standstill. The country is making every effort to keep both the wildlife and the industry alive, anticipating a comeback. The government has declared wildlife rangers an essential service, so their jobs have not been lost. Margaret Kenyatta, First Lady of Kenya, is very keen on elephant tourism in particular. Again, Diana Wanyonyi.
Kenya's First Lady Margaret Kenyatta has been on the forefront to advocate for the protection of elephants in Africa. She is also the patron of the Hands Off Our Elephant Initiative, a Kenyan anti-poaching campaign.
Kenya is endowed with some of the world's most iconic species of wildlife, and our participation in this conference provides opportunity to strengthen our country's resolve to eradicate illegal wildlife trade, to build coalitions, and to find solutions to better protect our wildlife. Change involves brokering agreements between diverse stakeholders of similar conviction to stand together in a cause we believe in. Sustainable development requires diverse interventions to protect our natural habitat. It requires building highly capable and functional institutions, as well as putting in place robust policies supported by commensurate resource allocation. It also requires us to consider new and innovative ways to combat sophisticated crime triangles and more research to inform practical policy interventions and to raise public awareness. Distinguished guests, Kenya has been able to reduce the level of poaching of iconic species considerably in the last 3 years. Our elephant population currently stands at over 34,000, while the rhino population stands at over 1,000. These are the fourth and third largest country populations in the world, respectively. In recent years, we have seen a notable decline in poaching in Kenya, largely due to enhanced wildlife law enforcement efforts and government investment in anti-poaching. We have revamped and improved training and equipped Kenya Wildlife Service ranger forces that continuously evict poacher elements from the parks. We have also strengthened collaboration with institutional networks and law enforcement agencies on fighting wildlife crime, including the judiciary, alongside local, regional, and international stakeholders, and most importantly, the local communities. Kenya is committed to eliminate markets and reduce demand for illegal wildlife trade through burning of ivory and rhino stockpiles. We have found it to be an impactful technique to deter the poaching of elephants and suppressing illegal ivory trade. Since 1989 to date, Kenya has burned a total of 137 tons of ivory and 1.5 tons of rhino horn. Kenya is a key transit hub within the region to international destinations. Various illegal wildlife specimens, mainly elephant ivory, rhino horn, pangolin scales, are transited through our ports. However, the application of strong and deterrent prison sentences have worked well to reduce illegal trade in wildlife. In addition, we have enhanced cross-border collaboration within the region and made appeals on the global front to encourage countries to join our efforts to close market demands for illegal trade. We congratulate those countries who have pledged their support towards this effort. Nonetheless, illegal trafficking of ivory, rhino horn, pangolin scales, among others, still persists through various sea and airports. This is a setback to our resolve and determination to completely wipe out illegal trafficking and sale of wildlife products in order to attain zero poaching levels. To this end, we have identified five critical areas that require support from our wildlife conservation partners to enhance our law enforcement capacity to deal with illegal wildlife trade. These include enhancement of capacity of our forensic laboratory to support law enforcement, leading to successful prosecutions. Improvement of our stockpile management system. Enhancement of our law enforcement at ports of entry and exit. Human-wildlife conflict mitigation. And the establishment of the population status and distribution of pangolin, which is fast emerging as a highly traded species. The Kenya government intends to step up its efforts to tackle this organized crime by supporting international law enforcement efforts, and further by collaborating with local communities to increase their investment towards protection of our iconic species. We call on every effort to enhance our intelligence and investigation networks to win this war. To this end, Kenya further plans to advance conservation education by holding programs with key stakeholders in order to mitigate the human-wildlife conflicts and enhance wildlife-human coexistence. We applaud the work that our media has played in profiling stories and supporting advocacy campaigns within local communities. In conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, I look forward to adding Kenya's voice to support our joint pledge towards this global fight and reaffirm Kenya's commitment at all levels to support the IWT conference declarations at the conclusion of this conference. I thank you.
That was an excerpt from Kenya First Lady Margaret Kenyatta's address to the 4th London Conference on Illegal Wildlife Trade in 2018. Aside from jobs as wildlife rangers and first ladies, some women are rising in Kenya's tourism management field. Far north of the Amboseli National Park is the Samburu National Game Reserve. There, Nicole Nanatoy has broken the glass ceiling as manager of the Saruni Wildlife Lodge. She is a local woman from the Samburu Cultural Group. They are traditional herders and speak a similar language to the Maasai. But Nanatoy is proficient in English. She addressed a webinar for environmental journalists in 2021. The noise was wind blowing across the microphone.
Thank you very much, Kiundu. And as you've introduced me, as Nicole Lengima, and my journey in conservation started a while ago after my primary school education. That's when I got my scholarship, my high school scholarship, from Save the Elephants organization. And from there, that's when I started having passion in conservation, both wildlife and vegetation. And after my high school, I was supposed to enroll for my college, but I heard there was a vacancy in a new lodge called Saruni Lodge in Kalama Conservancy. That's why I took my application as a housekeeper. So from my housekeeping training, I got my first promotion as a shop attendant, whereby the community shop, whereby we sell the beadwork from the communities around, was started. And they thought I would be the best candidate for that. And that's how I started my administration career. Then from there, I took my stores, purchase and supplies, computer training by the owner of the camp as well here. And after that, that's when I took my first diploma in hospitality management, and I got my promotion as an assistant manager. And after that, I also took a diploma course in human resource management, and that got my promotion as well after my hard work of many years as a manager now, a full camp manager, actually the first local woman from the Samburu community managing the camp. And I appreciate my employer, Saruni Lodges, because that is part of the women empowering project they are doing in all the conservancies. And on my background of where I come from a small village called Lorubai. That's why I was raised, I schooled there, and lucky enough, I'm now working in the community as well. So I have double perspective in earning both in conservancy, because I'm a member of Kalama Community Conservancy, as well as Saruni Lodge. And just to elaborate on something about the Kalama Community Conservancy, it's a spontaneous participant that is whereby the community has the power to make decision as well as control of the development project in the conservancy, unlike the national reserve. We have lots of activities going on between Kalama and Saruni. Saruni pays Kalama Conservancy a good amount of revenue for the last couple of years since it was started. It's 11 years since we started the camp. And to approach some of the incentives that are necessary to motivate the local people in conservancy, we support warriors in a ground whereby they perform local dances to our guests, as well as participating in some activities like the Warriors Academy. For women, we support them through the beadwork shop, whereby we get stuff from their respective villages, and then we get them sold here, and we give 100% of the sales back to the women. And also for the kids, we have annual kids activities whereby we show them the importance and the beauty of the wildlife conservation, as well as vegetation conservation. And that molds them to be ambassadors in the future and also in the community where they come from. Our staff, 95% of our staff are from the local community, and we train them here, majority of them. And also, we do support having the rangers around while they are doing the monitoring of the wildlife. And that helps us to monitor the number of wildlife we have and the growth. That will show us if we are in the positive angle or we have to do something about supporting it. And also, recently, we started a project of planting acacias, whereby we draw seed balls in the conservancies. And that helps us in raising the number of acacias. And also partnerships. We have good partnership with NRT and Kalama. And together we were able to be in control of the three pillars of conservancies. That is the local people, the wildlife, and the tourists. And due to the COVID-19, which has hit us big time, we have faced a lot of challenges of like no income from the tourism, and that made us to cut off some of our staff, and it really affected them. But we considered some of our staff while they were home. We kept on paying a 50% pay to them. And also on another angle, we resumed some days ago, whereby the measures that we took is we tested all our staff members. Currently, we have 19 staff, and that is because of minimizing the number of people in one place. And we've taken them through a training by the Ministry of Health on the precautions to be taken this moment. And also we have our hand washing stations everywhere, sanitizers, and also we got the Ministry of Health team and also a company which fumigates our camp some days ago, so that we'll be ready to receive our guests in the next couple of days. And we'll be happy to host our local guests as well. And they are really supporting us. And what we expect now is support from both our local tourists and as well as international in the future, if everything goes okay.
Nicole Nanetoi Lengima, Lodge Manager at Saruni in Northern Kenya, elaborated on the earning from tourists through the community conservation model and the impact of COVID-19. The wind was blowing loudly across our microphone. Reporting for Wings, I am Diana Wanyonyi in Mombasa.
Recordings in this program were by Diana Wanyonyi. Additional narration, Frida Worden. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org or visit our website wingsradio.org/wordpress. We also post a world news feed at facebook.com/wingsradio. An historic collection of our 35 years of radio productions is being uploaded to archive.org. Wings thanks our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, who hosts fortnightly salons at the website maternalgifteconomymovement.org. That's maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frida Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Good morning. This is Disability Justice, an everyday pursuit and survival. Your host, John Griffiths.
And Dina Wilder,
board operator.
Today, we are going to share part one of 2021 Build a Movement, which occurred on October 22nd. Part two and three occur early in November. And if you want to be part of this and are part of the disability community, you can contact Glenna Hayes, Advocacy and Outreach Coordinator of UCP. Contact Glenna through email by typing in Glenna, G-L-E-N-N-A dot Hayes, H-A-Y-E-S, at ucpconnections.org. In this episode of Build a Movement, or affectionately known as BAM, Alan Hines and Nico Serra are the facilitators. Alan Hines is the Housing Access Director of Community Vision and the Director of Real Choice Initiative. And Nico Serra is a very active disability activist. So listen now into Build a Movement 2021.
So John, this is your moment, my friend. We want to spend a moment with you to learn about BAM. So how did BAM start?
So BAM started out of anger and frustration. I talked to Katie Rose and I said, boy, would I like to get politicians in an hour? I mean, all the politicians, federal and state, into one room and scream at them for at least 2 hours. She said that wouldn't go over so well. So she suggested I talk to the advocacy groups that I was a part of, which at that time was led by Jennifer Knapp and Meg.
So Ellen asked John, what is the intention of BAM? What were your intentions when you started, besides yelling at people?
Well, honestly, we just wanted to get some kind of movement towards getting politicians to hear us by gathering more and more people. And the more I could get, the more I thought that politicians would start taking notice that, you got to kind of think the way politicians do. One thing they're majorly concerned about is getting reelected. So when they see a large number, my guess is first thing they probably say is, gee, I wonder how many of these people vote. Then the next thing they say is, I wonder how many of these people are in my district. And if they think there's enough people from their district, they start thinking, maybe I should listen to these people or otherwise I won't get reelected next time. Like I said, Build the Movement is just an effort to get more and more and more and more people involved. And when I say more people involved, I mean people with intellectual disabilities, people with physical disabilities who have many of the same issues that people with intellectual disabilities have. The people behind those people, like, all the caregivers, their PAs, their case managers, because the larger the net I throw, the more people who show up here, the more they keep on thinking, that's a large number. Maybe I should start taking some kind of action on their behalf. because I want to get voted in next time I'm up for re-election. And that's the intent behind Build a Movement.
And this is the fifth year, right, John?
Yes, it is.
Thank you, John. So this slide says, how did we get here? And when we talk about these systems and how she was talking about different groups being split up into, you know, from different groups from one another and all of this, and how we currently have our system set up, we're wondering, how did we get here? So Alan and I think that we are mostly split up by the type or cause of our disability, and we're also split up into how we're going to be rehabilitated with those disabilities and get jobs or do other things in the world. So we often get split up in groups based on those parameters. We also get split up by treatment methods, or like how the veterans go to the veterans hospital for things and we go to different hospitals. The rationale of different needs for different groups of people with disabilities. And this is something that we call silos. What are the different silos? This says, even though many of these populations overlap, we are still split up into split up by the system into general groups. So we've got our groups, people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. We've got, for me, I'm a person with an acquired disability, or somebody gets sick when they're older, maybe they get cancer or something like that. That's an acquired disability. Then we have people who get older, elders, seniors, sometimes we call aging populations. Then we got another group of veterans, people who go to war and get injured in war and come back with disabilities like we just saw in the video. We've got kids with disabilities, and we've got people who have mental health concerns that puts them into a different group. And then we've got blind community members, and we've got deaf community members. So those are most of the groups we could think of that we are right now split up into different, what we call silos. We're in our own little standalone system for whatever reason, even though we have a lot of common concerns. The impacts of separate systems. And we're gonna put a few of these out here, and we might ask you to participate too. So some of the impacts of the different systems are that they get into these rigid structures, separate systems, and they say, you have to be set up with a brokerage, or you can't use a brokerage because you don't meet these standards, or you're a veteran, so you have to go through the veteran hospital for certain things. So that gets really, really strict. And we use the word rigid to say that it doesn't move around. It's always got to be this way. People don't get services that make sense for them at all, or in some cases they get them, but it comes really late, right? Because it's going through systems and it just gets really, really time consuming. These systems also don't really prioritize people, right? They prioritize money and where the money is coming from and how the money gets split up and all these things to do with money, but we're not money, we're people. So we're not the top priority in these systems. Also, these systems are really, we use the word inefficient. It just means like we're duplicating our work a lot of time. It costs a lot more money. And again, people don't get what they need when they need it. Now let's talk about cross-disability organizing. And this is what John was talking about when he said he started BAM and he wanted to get a lot of people involved. Oh yeah, go ahead, Ross.
I guess my question is, why are still things the way they are, and what would happen in this present president and how things are running in the state? Would we go back to being segregated? And we know out through history, we're kind of going back to the way things used to be based on the COBRA stuff. Did that make sense?
Yeah, I'm just wondering.
So Ellen said, I personally think that we've come a long way from where we started, where we used to be.
And there's a lot of necessary decisions and the decisions from court.
So there's a lot of legislative, so laws, and decisions from courts, which also can turn into laws. That say that people with disabilities deserve to be a part of our communities. And that community integration is a big deal. So Alan said, I do share your concern, Ross. That we could move backwards in terms of community integration. And I think that we are going to probably talk more about ways that we can organize with people around us, whether they're a part of the IDD community or they're part of one of the other disability communities that we're not talking to so much right now. And then we're going to think about ways that we can work with each other, even if we don't totally understand each other, or you know, we're on a different page around certain things, that we will learn how to do that better, so that we can, I like to use the term call people in. And that's something that I learned from Lone Tran and Loretta Ross. And they talk about, instead of us always pointing at people and saying, you're wrong and I don't want you here, that we start figuring out, say, that doesn't make sense to me. Can you talk about it more? And then lead it to a conversation where we can start working together with people that we might not understand right from the get-go. So Alan said, I think there's a lot of things to learn about being in groups together with other people. So we did not plan on talking through some of those things today, but what we're going to focus on today is talking about why it's important to work together and what we might get out of working together. And it sounds like some of the feedback that we're getting is people saying, when I work with other people, sometimes it gets weird. And maybe that's something that we'll focus on next time. Okay, cool. And then Kiersey's got something to say.
Yeah, cross movements. There's always going to be issues with people and conflicts, but you can still work together. And there's always common interests. So we all deserve and need care. In disability organizing, there are some common issues that we all need. And it might be helpful to look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs maybe at some point during this meeting, or like not this meeting, but in future meetings, just knowing that people all need that stuff.
Absolutely. Okay. Thanks, Kiersey. So this is good. I'm really glad that people are bringing things up, that you're like, here are my concerns about this and that. That's wonderful. What this slide says, and we're going to speak to it a little bit more here in just a minute, cross-disability organizing is bringing all the people together that have the same barriers to make positive changes faster. Okay? So that's when we were talking about bringing people with intellectual and developmental disabilities together, with people with acquired disabilities and people who can't see, who are blind, and people who are deaf, and we and the veterans and the elders and people with mental health stuff. We come all together and figure out, what do we have in common and how can we work together to get our goals met? So I'm going to show you a picture here of a symphony. Can you see that? So when we have a symphony, there's a whole bunch of stuff that's happening behind the scenes. And then there's the stuff that's happening on the stage. And then there's also a part where people are the audience. So all of that stuff comes together and makes it into an exciting experience that you want to go out and go to a concert. And if you don't like orchestras and stuff like that, you can think about maybe like your favorite band or your favorite group, or even a sports team is kind of the same thing. So we've got the conductor, or if it's sports, we've got a coach. We've got all the players, We've got, in this picture, we've got people playing string instruments and wind instruments, percussion instruments. And if you look really closely in the back of the picture, you'll see that there's singers in this picture. So that's all the people on stage. Then we've got people behind the stage, the backstage people who are making sure that all the lights are on and that the sound is right and that everybody has their music, and even the people who wrote the music. Those are all part of having this experience come together. And then what we can't see in this picture is the audience. And the audience being a part of the show is a big deal too. You'll hear people who do like TV shows, they'll talk about how they've been doing TV shows without an audience, and how it's really weird for them because they're used to the audience laughing or like shouting out answers and stuff like that. And when you don't have the audience with you, it can really change how it goes. So that's just to bring together this idea of what it's like to work with a big group for one goal. And the goal in this scenario is putting on a really good concert. So how would this apply to what we're doing? Let's think about that now. How could working with people with the same barriers be helpful for everyone? And I'm gonna read through what we put on the slide here. And if people wanna share a little bit too, they're welcome to, but we're gonna kick it off with the slide to give people some ideas. So the first thing it says is, all people with disabilities working together for similar goals. People working behind the scenes to support people with disabilities, so our support workers, maybe family members, they're supporting us to do the work that we're doing. The next one says, natural ally. Natural allies will realize they have issues in common with us. So they go from being audience members. So we go from, people can maybe go from being passive, like audience members, to being people who are actively involved and engaged. So we've got family members, we've got friends, we've got our support workers, we've got our PAs, we've got our direct support workers, our care workers. And then one of the groups I'm really excited about connecting with at some point is all the people who are fighting for healthcare for all, the Medicare for all people. I think that that's a really natural ally group for us. So more people realize they too could become disabled at any moment. And that means what we're doing will benefit them too, right? Because people with disabilities, we're the only minority group that anybody could join in a minute, right? You might have a really bad accident or something's wrong with your belly and you go to the hospital and find out, oh no, you have a thing that's gonna affect you for the rest of your life. So we're the only group of minorities that people can be a part of at any moment. That means that almost everybody could get involved with what we're doing. We could become a powerful, popular movement. And this is a movement that humanity needs right now because we do have our difficulties here. And when we think about the whole world, we've got it relatively good compared to people in other places. So when we think about how hard it is for us here, like it's so much harder for people in other places. So like, there's a whole bunch of work to be done and we are the people to do it, I think. Does anybody wanna comment in here about this? Does this make sense to people?
Yes, this is Ross. It does. I guess the question comes, how do we work together with all our other issues that we have that we may not like to approach?
So really thinking again about that, how do we best connect with other people? Is that what you're getting to, Ross?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, cool. Well, thank you for bringing that up again. That is something that we are definitely gonna be addressing in the next meeting. Yeah, it looks like we got a couple of hands here. Let's hear from Susan.
I'm on the healthcare, Minnesota Healthcare Advocates. So we're trying to get the bill passed. So I'm on that almost 24/7. I'm also on the Mayfair Long of Me, and that's also part of healthcare. So I'm on both of those as well.
That's great. Thank you so much for sharing, Susan. So that's probably true for a lot of us, that when we think about all of the groups that might be potential allies with what we're doing, we could probably think of lots of people, right? And also when we think about that list of all the people who have similar problems to us, just because somebody's older, and maybe they don't even like to use the word disabled, they say, no, I'm just old. But the reality is they may have a hard time using stairs just like we do, right? So that means we have common barriers. And that means that we could probably work together on some stuff. So Alan said, if everybody always had everything they need to be successful, then people probably wouldn't be comparing us to each other and saying this person's more disabled than you, or giving us a hard time about one thing or another, or picking on one person in particular. That might not happen so much because we have everything we need. Go ahead, Lamar.
First of all, I would like to say good evening to everybody out there. And well, I kind of had some bad things and have been said in the wrong way. Bad things have said about me. But you know what? I'm not gonna let that bother me at all.
Yeah.
So I'm just gonna go ahead and move on and pick up the needle and change the song.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm gonna do. Like I said,
yeah,
pick up the needle and change the song.
Yeah.
So that's what it is. I had some bad things been said.
Yeah.
That's not very nice.
Yeah.
It's not nice, and it's, yeah. And
first here we'll say thank you, Lamar, and I think Lamar's got a tactic that is really helpful, and that a lot of us are very resilient is the word I'm thinking of, and adaptive and flexible. And in order to live well with disabilities, we learn to roll with things that sometimes are really, really hard. And also, it shouldn't come down to like whether or not one person has the resources to make something happen. Like, we need the system to be better for all of us. So thank you for sharing, Lamar. Yes, and that you had allies with you that helped you get through that hard moment too. That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
This slide says individual stories and group stories. While individual stories and experiences are important, putting them all together to make a bigger picture or a bigger story is really good thing for us to do. It helps people understand the bigger picture, okay? It says one person's problems could be fixed, but there might still be other people with the same problem, right? Or when we focus on one person at a time, it can make it really hard to look at the bigger picture and fix the systemic problems that are impacting everybody. And then it also says when big groups of people get together and work on the big problems, the systemic problems, we can make change happen faster. Group stories will invite more people to do the work with us. We're going to talk a little bit more about this before we get into breaking it down. So what this slide says is BAM and the bigger picture. So it says, as BAM has developed, we come back to the same issues year after year. We all have stories about these issues that are very important. Part of organizing and working together for change is fixing the bigger problems that get to all of our individual issues. So, talking about why these issues are important to the larger group of people means that we can have more people involved with us. And just to remind you what those issues are that we've come up with over the last few years, it says, what are the three priority issues of BAM? So we talk about access to affordable and accessible housing. We've talked about access to quality healthcare the minute we need it, and access to responsive disability services. So let's get into the discussion stuff. What is our group story? At past BAMs, we focused on individual stories. This year, we're going big. So the first one is, How might other groups of people with similar issues benefit from working with us? And the second question is, why is housing access, healthcare access, and responsive disability services important to us and people like us? Go ahead, John.
We had always come up with the same three items of concern when it comes to disabilities. One of them, of course, is the workforce crisis, which is dealing with the services and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then the other one was like when it comes to healthcare, as many of you know who are on OHP, they only cover 500 line items and everything else winds up coming out of your pocket, which if you have no income, that really screws you over. And then the other is, has always been the affordable, accessible housing. I mean, we're not the only group that has that problem. And I think that's a large problem for lots of people, mm-hmm. including probably our caregivers who work with us. But yeah, those have been some really big issues that have creeped up. And I'm pretty certain lots of people probably have their horror stories around the workforce crisis.
Yeah.
And of course, paying out of pocket expenses when it comes to medical and houselessness.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing, John.
Well, if we're talking about groups that we might work with, I think that there's like a TriMet.
There's TriMet Lift.
Yeah, and I think that there is like a TriMet Riders like union, like a group of people who are already interested in like making things better for people who ride TriMet. I don't know that they work specifically on Lift, but it seems like an issue that would be right along their, you know, it would be connected with what they're already doing. So that might be a group that we could work with.
We've learned that a lot of people who use Lyft services are not treated well, including the drivers. So it sounds like that's a hard place for everybody. And this is exactly what we're talking about, right? We all have these individual stories where we can't get, you know, hearing aids, you can't get your Lyft services, you can't get to your doctor when you need to, you can't get your voc rehab services, all this stuff. And it's like all of us are getting hit with this stuff from every direction, but it's like, what if we like joined arms in a group and we made a little wall with each other and we figured out how to get this stuff to bounce all of us as a group, right? So that we're not just each person having to fight for everything they need on their own, because that's too hard for everybody.
That's the end of Disability Justice. Since we cannot be fully aware of everybody's difficulties within the community, we would really like it if you would send us your email, disabilityjustice@kbu.org.
I'm Queen Ida, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM on your radio. Your spot for Cajun and Zydeco music. Bon ton roulette.
Did you miss the Afro-Caribbean and Reggae Marathon? No worries. You can go to kboo.fm/ACR to listen to the archived show. You can also snag a limited edition KBOO Afro-Caribbean and Reggae hoodie before November 20th to show your support for the music and the programming you love. Again, you can catch the Afro-Caribbean and Reggae Marathon and snag a limited edition hoodie at kboo.fm/ACR.